Live from Radio Catskill, it's Election Night 2025. Special election coverage on the local edition. I'm Jason Dole, and joining me in the studio, we have...
Patricio Rubio, and I'll be covering the races in the towns of Thompson and Fallsburg, as well as the race for the Sullivan County Sheriff.
I'm Kimberly Izar, reporting on the experience of voters today with interviews in the field.
And I'm Genevieve Hartnett, covering races in the towns of Bethel and Highland, plus additional field interviews.
Yeah, we're all here, and we'll be here for the next hour, going till 7 with this Election Night special, talking about the key races, issues, and implications of this very local election year. We'll also be checking in with Chris Rowley, Shawangunk Journal, Carter Walker, VoteBeat PA, and Liam Mayo of the River Reporter. Polls are still open. They close at 8 in Pennsylvania and at 9 in New York, so there's still time to vote. We're going to start with the latest news from NPR. It's Election Night on Radio Catskill.
Live from NPR News in Washington, I'm Ryland Barton. The Supreme Court will hear arguments tomorrow over a broad swath of President Trump's tariffs. As NPR's Danielle Kurtzleben reports, the White House is considering what to do if the court rules against them.
At issue is a 1977 law giving the president broad economic powers in cases of national emergency. Trump has used that law to tax imports from dozens of individual countries. The case only addresses one type of tariff Trump has imposed. His tariffs on specific goods like steel and aluminum would remain. White House Press Secretary Caroline Leavitt said that should the country-by-country tariffs be found illegal, Trump is thinking ahead.
I'll tell you, the White House is always preparing for Plan B. It would be imprudent of the president's advisors not to prepare for such a situation. With that said, we are 100% confident in the president and his team's legal arguments.
Trade experts say the president could impose new tariffs under other laws. Danielle Kurtzleben, NPR News.
The government shutdown is still disrupting American life as many federal workers go without pay, air travel has been disrupted, and food aid used by 1 in 8 Americans falters. Senate Republican leader John Thune says the consequences of the shutdown are growing more severe every day.
I'm hopeful again that this is the week in which the Democrats will conclude that this is not a good thing. And while they may believe politically that it's in their best interest, and obviously we've seen lots of statements that suggest that, it's certainly not in the best interest of the American people.
Democrats are demanding the extension of Affordable Care Act tax credits. President Trump has largely been absent from negotiations. He threatened to end SNAP food aid despite court orders unless the government reopens. A White House spokesperson says the administration is releasing the funds, but it's unclear how long that will take. In just a few months, Zohran Mamdani has gone from a long-shot candidate to a national name. He delivered an upset primary win back in June, where voters under 30 had the highest turnout of any age group. Now, on Election Day, he's banking on those voters again. But as NPR's Elena Moore reports, he's also resonating with young people outside of New York.
Mamdani has centered his campaign for mayor around affordability issues, pledging to freeze rents in rent-stabilized apartments, create city-run grocery stores, and make buses free. It's a platform that addresses some of the most pressing concerns for many young people around the country, like 26-year-old Daisy Lupa of Michigan.
A lot of stuff that he is trying to push forward in New York are things that we need even more in rural areas and even more in the Midwest.
Mamdani's candidacy comes as many young people like Lupa have grown frustrated with the Democratic Party and see Mamdani as a new voice challenging the status quo. Elena Moore, NPR News.
Stocks fell on Washington in Wall Street today, pulled down by tech companies that had been the main drivers of the market's rally so far this year. This is NPR News.
It's the local edition. I'm Jason Dole. And this is Radio Catskill's Election Night Special 2025. And we're going for the next hour with this special. Coming up, we'll be talking to Chris Rowley of the Shawangunk Journal about the races in Ulster County. We'll be talking to Liam Mayo, River Reporter, about races along the Pennsylvania border. And if you want to know how elections went in Pennsylvania today, how they were conducted, there is absolutely no better person to talk to than Carter Walker of VoteBeat PA. And they will all be joining us live in the second half of the program. And if you would like to watch this election special in addition or as opposed to just hearing it on the radio, we're broadcasting video on Facebook, Instagram, and YouTube. And if you support Radio Catskill, you should be following us on social media. Check out the live stream. Live with me in the studio, we do have most of Radio Catskill's news team, Patricio Rubio, Kimberly Izar, and Genevieve Hartnett. They've each been looking at particular races and issues. Patricio, what have you been watching?
The The ones I've been watching so far has been Folsberg, where the race of town supervisor had only one name printed on the ballot, Nathan Steingart. But we had sort of a ground roots come up, which is Brett Buddy. He's a farmer and small business owner who ran a writing campaign that caught a lot of people's attention. Buddy framed his run around protecting water resources and supporting small farmers and ensuring that residents have a greater voice in decisions about development and spending. Over in Thompson, voters were presented with a more traditional contest. Bill Reba Jr., the incumbent Democrat, once again sought re-election as town supervisor. He served for a number of years. Challenging him is Scott Mace, a Republican and a council member who's called for more accountability and a new connection between the government and residents. And both of these conversations are on WJFFradio.org. The big race I think everyone's looking at is Sullivan County Sheriff's race. Incumbent Michael Schiff, who's held the position since 2006, he's facing a write-in challenger, Tim Diamond, who is a retired state police senior investigator. And Diamond ran an unconventional write-in campaign after losing the Republican primary. And he's framing his measures around transparency, reform, and modernization inside the sheriff's office. This has become, you know, a really big race that people are watching all around the county. So this race has became sort of more about the badge. It's sort of a referendum on trust and the kind of policing Sullivan County wants in the years ahead.
Right. And, you know, we're going to be talking about this race, I think, a couple of times tonight. And I think we're going to be saying the term write-in candidate a few times tonight. You just said it twice there. We're seeing this pop up more and more. But this is a race a lot of folks are watching. I did see Sheriff Schiff, the incumbent in the race, early today. I wished him well. I saw a couple of Tim Diamond supporters. I wished them luck as well. I think we all saw some Tim Diamond supporters out at the polling places today. Genevieve, who did you see?
So I was speaking to Jake Gore at the Bethel polls today. You know, in spite of being a write-in candidate, Mike Diamond's gotten a pretty large amount of support from the community, and we heard reports of multiple supporters outside multiple polling places all around Sullivan County.
Well, let's hear what Jake Gore had to say about why he is supporting Diamond.
My name is Jake Gore.
Hi, Jake. And what's bringing you out today?
Well, I believe there needs to be some serious change in the sheriff's office, some serious structure and serious accountability. I'd love to see the department get accredited, and I'd love to see us continue moving forward with a good, positive department.
Yeah, and now can you tell me about Tim Diamond in particular? I'm realizing he's a write-in candidate. Why do you think it's important for people to be writing him in?
So Tim is a forward-thinking guy. He holds a lot of integrity. I think he's the right inspiration we need to help the entire county move forward. Just comes from a great background, and I don't think anybody's better than Tim for this position.
Okay, and there are some protests at a few of the other voting sites with, you know, for Tim Diamond. Will any of them be coming over here, or will it just be you today?
Well, I'm just here today. I know we have some of our wives and some other family members out, so we're just making sure everybody can see his name and make sure they know how to write him in.
All right. Okay. Well, thank you very much.
Thank you.
And I also wanted to clarify, I meant Tim Diamond. I was getting Mike Schiff, Tim Diamond blended together. But if you'd like to hear more of the interview with Tim Diamond and learn more about his campaign and platform and some of the issues he has with mail-in ballots, you can listen to Patricio's interview with him over on WJFFradio.org.
Now, as Patricio was telling me off air earlier today, that this is a write-in campaign. We won't know exactly who those write-in votes are for because they will take more time to kind of count and tally and codify. But we are hoping that we will know how many write-in ballots were cast, how many people voted for write-in candidate, which won't tell us exactly who they wrote in for, but it'll give us a ballpark idea of how this is shaking out. It might even be enough to understand the determination of this race come much later tonight. Of course, Radio Catskill will be going over local results tomorrow morning live on Radio Chatskill. I also talked to a Tim Diamond supporter, and This was an interesting conversation to me because it really showed like the level of passion, but also I think you can hear in this the level of planning that went into their ground effort. This was somebody who was parked kind of at the back of the parking lot at the Liberty polling place at the firehouse there. And that was actually one of the first cars that you see when you pull in, furthest from the building, and it was covered in signs.
Mine was the same.
Same thing.
At Bethel, yeah.
Just to be,
big sign,
you know,
yeah.
And as you'll hear here, there's questions about, you know, how close you can be.
Hi, I'm a volunteer with the Tim Diamond for Sheriff campaign, and I'm standing outside of the Liberty Firehouse, sitting to be here to answer any questions for any supporters.
So that was somebody who just drove up and said you're kind of pushing it for being inside the boundary. So he's questioning like how close you are for having signage next to the polling place.
Correct, because it's the stipulation is it has to be over 100 feet from the polling location, and it was already questioned earlier, and the pollers inside said I am parked in a sufficiently distant spot.
So do you want to describe your messaging, what you got on your car, and what you've done to get the word out here?
I just have actual marker on my car that says the write-in Tim Diamond. I do have bright signs that say about the write-in Tim Diamond for sheriff, as well as I have a sign that says, ask me how and ask me why. This way people know that they can come up and talk to me.
Have they been?
Yes. Yes, I've had several people that have come up and asked me and asked. They wanted to confirm spelling as well as confirm exactly how on the ballot to do it.
What time did you get here, and what have you been seeing?
I got here at 6:45 this morning. It is now after 10 o'clock, and it has definitely been a steady flow in and out of the parking lot. Very rarely were there no cars in the parking lot.
It's windy and cold. How long are you going to keep this up?
As long as I can tolerate it. I'm prepared. I got many, many layers and a heat pack in my gloves.
You know, the poll workers are here until 9.
Yep, I know.
All right. Well, good luck.
Thank you so much.
So there's a Diamond supporter who was there at 6:45, 15 minutes before the polls open, and plans to be there right on through the night. If she can, a supporter who wanted to remain anonymous. Kimberly, what do you think of this?
I mean, it's really interesting. I was also at the polls this morning from 8:30 a.m. to 10 a.m., and the polls were actually relatively quiet, but I did also speak to one Tim Diamond supporter, very briefly, also outside of the 100-foot marker pole, also calling for accountability with the sheriff and asking for change, specifically looking at making sure that budgets are being stuck to. What was interesting, though, was there were a few folks who didn't want to speak with me, but was passing the trucks with, you know, Tim Diamond supportive signs and was honking in support. And so there was kind of this like quiet solidarity happening with folks who didn't want to speak to the press, but were showing signs of support.
Patricio, anything else on the sheriff's race?
It's been such an interesting race because it being having a sort of a write-in candidate in the whole scheme of things. You know, I'm just interested in we had riding candidates before, but yeah. It's been a race, two races, the Fallsburg and Charlotte County Sheriff's Office, has been this really strong riding candidates come into the play. And I just want to know, you know, is this sort of the telltale sign of what the future is going to hold? Because more and more candidates here locally are running unopposed. And now we have this season, at least a whole crop of riding candidates who want to be in those seats now. And I don't know, what is this telling of rural elections now?
Yeah, and that's kind of the way that I've been feeling, too, as I look around at this. Because what you see when you look at the ballots across Sullivan County, I was looking at the ballots over in Delaware County, you see a lot of people running unopposed. You see a lot of places where there's only a Republican candidate. Every once in a while, you'll see it's just a Democratic candidate, and that's it. Sometimes people are on multiple parties, but it's still just one or two people. And the fact that there's write-in candidates, does that say that there's both parties operating, at least in a rural area, haven't been developing their future leadership or haven't been opening up avenues to move up through the party and serve? Or are we seeing too much into this?
I think I'll also just add, you talked about the level of planning that is going into this write-in campaign. And I think that it speaks to more grassroots campaigning and organizing that we're seeing both at the Democratic level and the Republican level. I know we're talking about the sheriff race right now, but even with the New York City mayoral election, with the grassroots campaign of assembly members around Mamdani, he was polling less than 1%, and now he's the current Democratic nominee. And so I think it does also speak to this growing nature of grassroots campaigning that we're seeing at both parties.
And, you know, a little bit, though, it also speaks to the tenuous nature of a write-in campaign, because, like, how are you going to get people to vote for you when your name isn't even there on the ballot? Some of these races are even more visible because they have to be. Otherwise, they won't even have a shot. They have to make more noise. They have to make more of a splash just to get people to even consider casting a vote that isn't already on their ballot.
And that's what I've been seeing. I saw Genevieve and Kim saw this at the polls of some of those write-in candidates at the polling places. Before the 100 mark that you have to be away from the polling places, I ran into Brett Buddy this morning in Fallsburg. He was handing out postcards, and I know Genevieve and Kim, you saw Tim Diamond supporters at the polls answering questions for folks. Because, as I said, they're making a strong case for their views and their policies for this election season.
Kimberly, what else are you watching today, and what did you find when you were out there and reporting?
Okay, so I was at two different polling locations this morning, first at the Government Center in Monticello, and then I headed over to Thompson Town Hall. And it's interesting because I was talking to Tim this morning. When you're heading into Monticello, it's very clear that it's election day. Like, there are signs everywhere on billboards and then lawn signs. I mean, literally, you can't drive anywhere in the county or outside of the county for a couple miles without seeing something. But then when you actually get to the actual polling place, it was actually relatively quiet. And I think there are a couple of reasons to it. It being an off-year general election, lower voter turnout, there's no presidential elections. But when I actually started talking to voters, the voters that I spoke to were talking specifically about national issues and how they were turning out locally in order to respond to nationally. I spoke to one voter, Olga from Monticello, who's talking about the government shutdown and SNAP delays. And here is just some of that conversation.
Sorry about that. Here you go.
What are some of the issues that are top of mind for you?
I would have to say right now, SNAP. Food is very expensive, and our government, the people that are in charge, are not, you know, doing the things that they should do to make sure that the people that need to have this service do have the service. So food and safety, definitely worried about all these children being missing, and no one is doing anything about it, as well as women, being trafficking. So those are the type of things that I'm worried about. And also the economy, mainly, because it's going up and we're not getting paid more and we're getting less and less and less. So it is really, it's a scary time.
And one more question. What kind of change do you hope to see with the vote that you make today?
That is a real hard question for me, because I would like to say that I would like the government to open up and for them to address the health care issues that are about to go up and do something about it. But I don't think much is going to change. And I don't even know what to honestly like to look for. I'm not very hopeful right now. I apologize. I'm just going in to do my duty.
Yeah, that was Olga, who is from Monticello. I spoke to her at the Government Center this morning. And I mean, Jason, you can hear in her voice, there's like a sense of discouragement, but also a sense of obligation. She was saying that she does not feel like there's much change that's going to happen from this local election, but she still feels like her civil duty that she needs to come out and vote.
I feel like when we leave here, we wrap this coverage, a lot of us will be checking out what's happening with the national results. And I think people watching the national various races across the country will be looking for indications of, you know, where political power lies and if it's shifting, if the Democrats are landing on any kind of key message or momentum. But when I look at our local races, I don't see anything, even if that's the motivation for people to get out there, is how they're feeling about what's happening nationally. Perhaps part of that sense of, you know, maybe it won't work is due to the fact that there aren't really that many races where you can make that kind of statement here locally.
And, you know, I wish I could play a clip from this one voter who I spoke to, but she didn't want to talk on, with my recorder. But so I actually spoke to one person who didn't vote in this general election. She's voted in Sullivan County for the last 20 years. And I asked her if she voted this year. And she said that she hadn't because she felt like it wasn't that much of a consequential election. And when I asked her why, she was just like, she kind of just shrugged her shoulders.
And do you think that's usual local election ennui, the fact that we see drop off when there isn't like a big ticket, national race?
I think so. And I think that, you know, there's on the ballots, there's that question about at making sure that, you know, elections across all the board, across all state, federal, local elections all fall in the same year. And, yeah. And it's because of low voter turnout.
And that was something that we were talking about earlier today, and I think we should mention here, yeah. We didn't really pencil it in, but that whole notion that any of the races that today people are voting on, at least in New York State, these races that are for 2-year terms, they're only going to be 1-year terms. Is that right?
Right. Yeah, that's something I sort of forgot. Maybe we didn't talk about a lot about this new law that's putting these elections down on even years. So some of these races that we have in like the supervisor for like, say, like Fallsburg, he's going to be there just for 1 year. Whoever wins is Nate or the write-in or whoever. And they have to do this whole thing again in 2026 and to start the whole process over again. I think Genevieve had, especially the town of Highland, you had one of the candidates, like her. She kept saying that it was no glory in this year.
Yeah, because, you know, because they changed it from 2 years or the 2-year terms because they put it on the even years. The current incumbent, John Pizzolatto, who is the Highland Town Supervisor, he's only been in his role for 1 year and has gotten a lot done in that year. He's secured over $700,000 in grant funds so far, in infrastructure improvements, and updates to Highland's town plan. But however, his challenger, Mary Ellen Carney, Mel Carney, as she goes by, said exactly that. You know, it'll be a term of no glory. It's basically just, in her view, to just reverse, you know, just create more financial transparency, and there won't be any major achievements that happen in the course of 1 year, in her words.
And on top of it being, again, it's a local election year where turnout is already struggling. So it's a double whammy of no particular glory today. Yet the local races are still crucially important.
Yeah. And I think also, you know, going to Pennsylvania a little bit too with the judicial retention race, I feel as someone who used to live in Pennsylvania, I feel like it is a race that has not necessarily gotten the same level of attention as, you know, especially the New York City mayoral race and up California and other races around the country. But it is a very pivotal one because if the judges, it's three judges, Donahue, Doherty, and Wecht, and we'll have Liam Mayo on from the River Reporter to talk more about this later. But, you know, if they are voted out, then there could be a complete party shift within the court, and that could really affect things before the next presidential election. So it's understanding how much things at the local and state level really do impact ultimately our federal politics.
Yeah, and I would encourage longtime listeners of the Local Edition just to think back on the past year, how many times I talked to Carter Walker of Vote BPA, who will also be talking to you tonight, and we're talking about court rulings in terms of how is the election actually going to happen. All through last year leading up to November and even into November, we were talking about the latest court ruling. So these things are important.
Yeah, I just want to make a comment about the local election. You know, this is on the heels of many towns and villages passing their budget this year. Some towns haven't passed it fully. Like Fallsburg just passed their budget. They're going have an increase of 2.14%. And also, I know, Kim, so you cover the legislature, the county is going to pass their budget soon in December, and they're talking about a 9% increase in property taxes. So the reason I mentioned this is you know, while you know a lot of focus is always on the national election and things like that, but these local elections directly affect every one of the taxpayers. Because if you do not like what's happening with the budget, if you do not like happening with folks and how towns and villages are spending their money, this is your time to change that and have your voice heard.
And I think this is actually a great reminder, time to remind people that polls are open.
Yes.
Open in New York until 9 p.m., in Pennsylvania until 8 p.m. And I just want to remind people of a couple voting rights information, because one voter I spoke to, she was actually, you know, still a little bit undecided and figuring out what to do before she headed in. But just a few things, you know, polls are open. Voter intimidation is prohibited. You know, there cannot be any electioneering, as we already spoke, outside. That has to happen outside of the 100-foot marker. Voters are protected by state and federal law against voter intimidation. That can look like a number of things. Obviously, if you feel like you've been intimidated or suspect any voter fraud, you should talk to your local board of elections, but you can also report that through a formal online complaint, both in New York and Pennsylvania.
The boards of elections take this so seriously. People from both parties working on these boards of elections, we talk to a lot of them in our area. That's up at WJFFradio.org's election page. But just here in Sullivan County, you know, things have changed just the last couple of years. I went to my regular polling place, which is in White Sulphur Springs, and that happens in the fire hall. And for years, you know, there would be, here's where you're voting, and it's a big fire hall. And then on the other end of the hall, here's where the ladies' auxiliary is selling some baked goods. Now those baked goods are being sold in the kitchen with the door to the kitchen closed off, you know, in a separate space. And it's just, you see that people have been just being up and above board, making sure everything is safe and not interfering for the voters in the local election places. And I think it speaks to the diligence of the boards of elections. Kimberly, anything else you want to let folks know?
I think I would just want to remind people, if they haven't voted yet and are heading there, we were talking about poll workers. I just want to remind people that, like, you can ask for help if you're at the polling location, if you're at your polling place and need support. I mean, poll workers are there and they're trained to support you if you're a person who's disabled or a person that needs language assistance. Poll workers are there to support you, both in New York and in Pennsylvania. If you make a mistake on your ballot, my partner earlier this week made a mistake on his ballot and had to request a new one. And that's something that I think a lot of people don't know, is if you accidentally write in the wrong person or incorrectly fill out the wrong, you know, bubble circle, you can ask for a new ballot, and it is within your rights as a voter to do so.
And I would also add, I think sometimes people are afraid to vote, or they feel like, oh, I can't voice my opinion because I don't totally know who's on the ballot. It would be worthless to even do that. And that's, again, where I would just reference people to our coverage on WJFFradio.org if you're in New York or in Sullivan County. And also if you're in Pennsylvania, one of our partners, Spotlight PA, does really, really great work with candidate guides. So if you're in New York or Pennsylvania, either one of those resources, if you're on your way to the polls, we will not judge you for procrastinating. It's fine. No. but they're there because we're all busy, but it's also they're there because it's all really important to participate in.
Yeah, you know, and I don't want anything that we're talking about tonight, any of the issues we're talking about, any of the particular candidates or races that we're talking about. We are just covering this to make sure that you are informed. We don't want to engender any specific action on your part, except for this. This is the one call to action I'll do, which is, if you haven't voted yet, there is still time for you to vote. You could consider voting, although, you know, if it's convenient for you, you know, there's always circumstances. Again, it's 6:28 right now. We're closing in on the 6:30 mark. So polls are open for about another hour and a half in Pennsylvania, and more than that in New York. Polls close at 9 in New York State. This is a local edition's special election coverage. I'm Jason Dole. Kimberly?
Oh, I was just going to add, you know, we were talking about when polls close, and just one reminder I want to remind people of is that if you are on the line when polls close, you still have the right to vote. So if it's, you know, if you're in Pennsylvania and it's 8:05 p.m., but you're already on the line, stay on the line.
Yeah. I would say also, too, if you are, like, waiting to vote and you're on a line, like, in our listening area, let us know. Because I'd like to know what polling place is doing that much business tonight, you know.
Give us a call.
It could happen. Genevieve, real quick, what races are you watching?
Well, so I was outside of the – I was at the Duggins Community Center today covering the Bethel race. And I spoke to Jake Gore, who was there with Tim Diamond's campaign. And like we said, kind of similar to what Kimberly was saying, you know, signs lining all the way up and the huge Tim Diamond sign. But I would say in general, it was a relatively slow but steady turnout. While I wasn't able to talk to any voters, just given, you know, just stipulations that the town put on, I was able to speak to two members of the Smallwood Maungup Valley Fire Department Ladies Auxiliary program and when they were doing their annual Krispy Kreme sale. So and that's here's that now.
Marion Steed, I'm Terry Coliotti.
And what's brought you out today?
Every year when we have an election, we sell donuts from Krispy Kreme for the Smallwood Maungup Valley Fire Department Ladies Auxiliary.
Nice. And how has it been so far today? Has it been a lot of people coming through or slower than usual?
I would say it's about average, it's steady
we only
stream.
Have two boxes left.
Yeah, we have two boxes of donuts left, if that's any indication.
Well, thank you so much, and I hope you have a great rest of your day.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, and those are workers that Genevieve Hartnett spoke to earlier today. Which polling place was that, Genevieve?
That was the Bethel polling place. That was at Duggins Community Center in White Lake.
And yes, there's lots of communities that do like sales and community things alongside of elections. I did mention White Sulphur earlier. Those baked goods might be gone by now, but they sure had a lot of clam chowder as well. I know up in Hankins, they had clam chowder and chili. Hopefully they keep those in separate pots. Whatever you found out at your polling place, hope is good. Real quick, Genevieve, before we move on to our first guest on the phone, can you just tell us quick about the ballot proposition that was on the back of every New Yorker's ballot today?
Yeah, so it was the first one when you turned over the ballot, and it was causing a little bit of confusion given some of the initial wording. But basically, the too long, don't read version is that it is bringing the land on which the Mount Hovenberg Olympic Ski Park sits on, all of those trails, into compliance with Forever Wild state protections, which is a great thing that New York State does to protect ecologically valuable land all across the state. This is, of course, in the Adirondacks, and it was built for in 1932 for the Lake Placid Olympics. And just given development, it's continually expanded more and more onto state forest preserve land. But ultimately, voting yes on this bill would just bring all of that land into protection under the state, but it would still allow, you know, sporting events to happen there, people from all over the world to come see this historic site. It's in support by a lot of environmental groups as well as a lot of the state legislature. It's passed in the assembly 2023 and 2025. So it has a lot of support. And it is also just worth noting that for a while, this site had been kind of kept as a backup location for the 2026 Winter Olympics if Milano and Cortina in Italy were not prepared to host in time. But it appears that time has passed. So there was confusion if it was asking about building a new site. That's not what it is at all. It's just making sure this beautiful land that has, you know, given so many people an opportunity to, you know, go out there and ski and do all kinds of fun winter sports, just bringing that on to into state protections for the environment.
So if a majority of New Yorkers vote yes, that's what'll happen. If a majority of voters vote no, then it won't happen.
Yep.
And that's what's happening on the back of the ballot. Thank you for explaining that. Thank you for explaining that to us. Genevieve Hartnett is here with us live in the studio, as well as Kimberly Izar, Patricio Rabayo. I'm Jason Dole. This is an extended edition of the Local Edition. We'll be going until 7 o'clock. And joining us on the phone right now is Carter Walker of Vote BPA to tell us how elections have been going in Pennsylvania. Carter, are you there?
I am. Hello.
Well, happy Election Day to you.
Happy Election Day to you as well.
So what did you go anywhere today? Did you actually see the polls in person? And if so, what did you see?
I did. So I traveled a little bit around southern Lancaster County, you know, heavily Republican area. And then I also went up to Dauphin County, where I am now, spent some time in Harrisburg, our state capital, Democratic area, talking to voters and the campaign staff that were outside the polls and getting their sense of, you know, what's been going on and how they're voting on the judicial retention elections.
Right. And in terms of, I know one of the things you also watch is just technically how elections go. If there has been any problems across the Commonwealth, you're the person who would know about it. Have there been any problems today?
Yeah, there was one pretty significant problem in the southeast part of the state. In Chester County, the poll books, which are the big paper books, I don't know if in New York for some of your listeners, they use all electronic poll books, but in any regard, the books that the poll workers will use to actually check in voters and make sure that they're in the right place to be voting. There's a problem with the printing of those books where the names in the books only contain Democrats and Republicans, but not third-party voters. And there's about 75,000 of those voters in Chester County. So if a third-party voter were to show up at the polls, you know, their name wouldn't be in the book and they couldn't vote a regular ballot. So they'd have to vote a provisional ballot, which does carry some risk that, you know, a mistake might get made and their vote is not counted. As a result, the county says, of course, it's going to investigate and figure out how that occurred. But voting hours have also been extended until 10 p.m. in Chester County for anybody who might have been turned away from the polls or just decided not to go because they didn't want to vote a provisional ballot.
Hey, Carter, this is Genevieve Hartnett. I am actually was born in Chester County and I'm from there originally. Amazing. So I was just curious in terms of the, you know, what you were saying about the printout ballots. Obviously, Chester County, it's, I would say, a very purple district. I mean, do you feel like the printing issue, do you feel like it was any kind of partisan influence or do you think it was just mismanagement? Have you gotten any indication of that at all?
Yeah, definitely a purple area. And no, I would doubt any kind of partisan malfeasance here. The election administrator who runs the show there is pretty well regarded by her colleagues around the state as running not just a tight ship, but a well-managed one. She's typically pretty organized. How exactly this happened, you know, I don't know. I'd hate to speculate. But these things, you know, the county's not printing these poll books. They're big ledgers, basically. And, you know, the county doesn't have a printing press. That'd kind of be a waste of money. They outsource it to other companies. So I'm guessing there was some kind of breakdown in communication or maybe the files that were sent between the county and the printer, or maybe the printer just used an old file or something like that. I'm sure that's what the case will turn out to be, but we're not going to know exactly for probably a little while because, of course, the county's got more pressing things to deal with at the moment.
Yeah. Do you think it'll affect when the results actually come in for, you know, what the actual retention results were?
Well, whether or not it affects the retention race and the ultimate outcome there, I think that would be less likely than some other races just because the retention statewide, so the margins might be large enough that whatever provisional ballots remain uncounted in Chester County possibly won't affect the outcome of that race. Now, again, and then the asterisk there is, of course, we got to see what the margin is at the end of the night. If it's real close, maybe the amount of provisional ballots in Chester County, however many that is, does affect the outcome. I would say it would be more likely that these provisionals will affect or have a greater potential to affect the outcome for local races. You know, it's not just retention this year. We also have the school board and, you know, town council races on the ballot. And those, you know, those are often decided by just a couple of votes. So if the county has, you know, a much greater portion of provisional ballots than before, and it takes some time to go through that and make sure everything on the outer envelope was filled out properly and that the person casting it is actually eligible, that could cause some delays there.
Thank you.
Carter, I know that one of the things you wanted to find out here on Election Day is whether or not the extensive work that you did on covering these judicial retention races, if that had broken through at all, and if just the general campaigns themselves had reached people in Pennsylvania. Were you able to answer or start answering those questions for yourself today?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, in the lead up, like you're saying, there was a lot of focus on this race, not just from us, but from other local media and national media. and from political parties and interest groups. Everybody was writing about or spending money advertising on these races and, you know, living in the political bubble that myself and many of the folks doing that do, you think, oh, well, obviously they know, they hear about these things because everyone's talking about it. But, you know, that was one of the surprising things, I think, when I was going around with polls, is that what I was hearing from voters a lot was not that they weren't interested in the races. It was just that they had motivations beyond what the messaging from the campaigns or what the reporting had been. You know, the campaigns obviously were, you know, pushing things like, well, you know, you want to keep these justices on the court just in case there's any, you know, abortion-related issue that comes up, or we want these judges off the court because we don't agree with the COVID-19 rulings that they made. And of course, our coverage is trying to break down specifically what each ruling was and how each justice voted. But what I was hearing from voters was that they were voting on things like, you know, of course, there's always a lot of just straight ticket voting. Well, I just voted the Republican slate or the Democrat slate, so that's what I went with. I heard from people saying, you know, I don't like what Trump's doing, and I see this as a way to stick it to Trump. Or, you know, I heard from some folks that said, you know, I don't think judges should be on the bench forever. I think 10 years is long enough, so I don't want to retain them for another 10 years.
Something that we've been talking about here is the fact that at least at the national level, a lot of the news coverage and analysis is going to be about what does this very local election year overall mean for the bigger political picture in America, where the two parties are at. And as you said, you know, a referendum on the folks that are in power at any given moment. Are you seeing that motivation from folks that are heading out to the polls, that they're looking to send any kind of message, or are they looking more at the ballot in front of them?
I think that definitely is a motivator for some voters. Like I mentioned, the one rural Democrat who I'd met that did not like what Trump has been doing and saw this as an avenue to express that displeasure. Municipal election voters, these folks who vote in the non-federal election years, they tend to be really politically engaged people because, you know, it takes a lot to motivate somebody to come vote in every year when there's not as much excitement or, you know, what people perceive as much on the line as there is in a federal year, even though, you know, local races can... I lose you guys?
Nope, we still got you. How you doing?
Oh, sorry. Yeah. I got a dial tone for a second.
Yeah, sorry about that.
No worries. But yes, I think that's why these races often get looked to as an indicator of how national sentiment is. Although there's, I'd say, probably better races around the country at the moment to look to for those types of indicators, you know, New York or the Virginia governor's race, those would be two that come top of mind for me.
Hey, Carter, Kim here. You started talking a little bit about this already, just the role of money in political campaigns, especially with the state Supreme Court race. And I'm curious just your take on the growing influence of money in political campaigns. I mean, general elections are increasingly becoming more expensive, and we're seeing with the state Supreme Court race, I mean, it's projected to hit, I think, $15 million or even more. Just curious what your thoughts are around this and if you think this is going to become the new normal for elections.
Yeah, I will say what knowledge I have of this comes from my colleague Stephen at Spotlight PA. He really does some great campaign finance reporting and has been on this race. But you're right, we have been seeing a tremendous amount of spending in this race, which is unusual for other judicial retention races in the past, but has been part of a trend in recent years. I have a colleague here at VoteBeat who reports in Wisconsin, and of course they had a Supreme Court election earlier this year, actual judges getting elected, not just voting to keep a judge on the bench like we are here in PA. And we just saw a ton of money coming into those races again. And, you know, I remember North Carolina as well. Last year, they had some high court races for state courts there that saw a big influx of spending. So I do think this is becoming a new avenue for political spending, and I would be surprised if it didn't continue.
Carter, anything else that you're watching tonight that you want to let folks know?
Yeah, I think I'm definitely going to be paying attention to this Chester County issue. Would like to see what the root of the problem was there, and of course, looking to that with an eye towards any solutions that could be had to avoid it in the future. You know, one thing, I was talking with an election director from another part of the state after this happened, I had done some reporting recently on the growing number of counties using electronic poll books in the state, and this election director pointed out, you know, electronic poll books might have been able to avoid this issue because they have a function where you can automatically send an update to the poll book, to the poll books with, you know, the new list of voters directly from the county, and you don't have to reprint poll books like Chester County had to do today. But the state doesn't allow them to be connected to the internet currently, although other states do. So, you know, he suggested, well, if we could do that, and if Chester County had electronic poll books, then this entire issue could have been avoided. So I think that's one of the things I'll be looking for is what was the root cause and how could it be avoided in the future.
And you can be looking for Carter Walker's work up at votebeat.org. He's from VoteBeat PA. Also at Spotlight PA, often your work is there as well. Carter, I want to thank you as always for all the good work that you do on election coverage in Pennsylvania. Thank you so much.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me.
This is a local edition. It's a special extended hour-long edition of the local edition tonight so that we can do... Okay, here we go. So that we can do this coverage for you here, special election coverage. I'm Jason Dole. I'm live in the studio as most of our whole news team. We've got Patricia Robayo, Kimberly Izar, Genevieve Hartnett. And on the phone with us now, we have our next news partner, and that would be Liam Mayo, news editor at The River Reporter. Liam, thank you so much for joining us.
Hi, Jason. Thanks for having me.
Thank you for being here. So did you get out to the polls at all today?
Yeah, I've been doing the rounds, making brief stops throughout Sullivan County and then heading into Wayne County, Pennsylvania to end the day.
So what has your journey taught you big picture, so to start with?
I mean, big picture, we ran into sort of the similar people y'all were mentioning earlier on in the program, people out stumping for the write-in campaigns. In general, I was interested in looking at like turnout throughout the county and I think like, or throughout the area. And a lot of that will still kind of need to be seen as final results come in. But we got some preliminary turnout numbers from Highland and Honesdale, Highland, New York, and Honesdale, Pennsylvania, two of the races we're watching pretty closely. Highland had 450 votes cast by 2:15 p.m. For comparison, the last time there was a supervisor's race on the ballot in 2023, that race ended with 897 ballots cast. And over in Honesdale, there were 510 votes cast as of 4:30 p.m. Again, 2021, the most recent time there was a mayoral race on the ballot, there were about 1,000 ballots cast all told. So in both those cases, a little over half of the day gone and a little under half the or around half the final results from the last time these races were on the ballot. But there's still a lot of hours in the day until the polls close. And, you know, as people start to get off of work and potentially we're planning to go to the polls after work, it's perfectly reasonable that we could see the final numbers come in around there. We were for a broader level, checking in with some of the county officials throughout the day. And in both Wayne and Sullivan County, we heard that turnout was pretty steady. Not like people were turning out for the polls. It wasn't like there wasn't turnout, but it wasn't necessarily anything to write home about either. It wasn't like there was this huge burst in turnout that may have happened.
Liam, this is Genevieve Hartnett. I interviewed both John Pizzolatto and Mary Ellen Carney, who were both running for Highland Town Supervisor. And there was definitely, you know, a real back and forth between them. There was the kind of public disagreement that they had at the reorganizational event at the beginning of this year. I spoke to them about, must have been about 2 weeks ago now, and in the lead up to the final days before the election, did you see any more comments that they made about each other? What were kind of their closing pitches to voters?
Yeah, when I spoke to each of them, they both had things to say about each other. Pizzolatto, the sort of incumbent supervisor, largely focused on some of the things he wants to see done during his term, or some things that he's started but sort of wants to see through to completion, some renovations to town properties like the courthouse and town hall, as well as the Highland Health Initiative, a project to bring a health clinic into the town. Whereas for Mel Carney, she was primarily focused on some of the things that she saw Pizzolatto as doing wrong or as not quite doing properly in the way he was going about his work. And I think, as you mentioned earlier on in the program, seeing that there wasn't necessarily going to be any glory in her term, just that she wanted to shut down or unwind or rethink some of the things that Pizzolatto had begun to engage in. Mm.
And Liam, did you say you got down over into Pennsylvania and over to Honesdale?
Yeah, I ended the day in Honesdale. Again, sort of similar, steady turnout, but not necessarily going gangbusters. It's kind of a similar situation there as in Highland, where there's kind of a strong disagreement between two candidates for. Well, in Pennsylvania, or in this race, it's borough mayor compared to town supervisor. But there's kind of a big picture disagreement about the path forward for the municipality that could potentially bring voters out. I think the theme that y'all have been talking about tonight and the theme that we've sort of saw throughout the day is that people will turn out or will be we'll stump in this weather or will be willing to go to the polls if they can see that there's a change or that they want change or if they see that a certain candidate will bring them change. So I think both in...
Okay, sorry, I think we just lost Liam, unfortunately. This is Radio Catskill, and we're wrapping up our coverage here. And here it's live election coverage. And thank you so much for listening with us here. We're here until 7 o'clock on this extended edition. I'm sorry, Liam was in the middle of talking about something we talked about before, Kimberly, just like, again, the referendum nature, perhaps, of these local elections.
Yeah, and I think that, like both Liam and I have observed, it was relatively quiet at the polls. I mean, it is an off-year general election, meaning that there's typically lower voter turnout during this time. But like we have been saying, polls are open until 9 p.m. here in New York and then 8 p.m. in Pennsylvania.
Yeah, I mean, this has sort of been the race that I wish there were more contested races because I think folks are so involved now. And something we haven't talked about is sort of the increase of social media and sort of AI when it comes right. into the whole playing thing. And mm-hmm. something I asked Tim Diamond when he was doing an interview for us is because there was an AI video that was released using some of our footage, and he says his team had nothing to do with it. But you know, it was sort of a way to see how AI is going to play into the race.
Yeah, and I'm like, can we take a moment to talk about that a little bit? Because the growing use of AI and technology in political campaigns and local elections is really interesting. I mean, we saw that really pick up during the 2024 presidential elections with Trump aggressively using AI for his campaign videos. And we're starting to see that really trickle down at the local elections, both from supporters of individual candidates and then of candidates using the AI itself, which I find extremely fascinating and both terrifying at the same time.
Yeah, and I even find sometimes in reporting, you know, when I tell people that I am a reporter, they ask, oh, do you use AI to write your articles? And at first, I'm a little offended, but then I also remember it's like we hear it so frequently, you know, just in our political discourse and in the way these campaigns are run. I reaffirm to them, no, but I understand why the question is there because it's so prevalent right now.
Yeah. I mean, there are news initiatives that use AI in research and things like that, and you know, that's just a way to see how much it's going to affect politically in our lives.
Yeah, sorry. Did this start with talking about how like AI entered like local politics in a big way during the primary for sheriff in Sullivan County?
Yes.
Yeah. Which again, and you did ask write-in candidate Tim Diamond where there was an AI video, you know, benefiting his campaign essentially, but he pretty much distanced himself from that.
Yeah,
right?
he denied that anything came from his party, but it's in heavy use. And like Kim mentioned, like how the president currently now is using AI. You know, there was a recent post of him flying a jet airplane, you know.
Yeah. Well, this is, again, we've heard a lot about fake news in the past, decade almost. And this was literal fake news. It was a fake news person giving a newscast that wasn't actually real. This is Radio Catskill. It's a local edition. We're down to the final few minutes of our local election coverage. And to help bring it on home for a quick update here, we have Chris Riley from Shawangunk Journal. Chris, how are you doing?
Not too bad. You know, it's been an interesting day. I voted. As usual, where I vote on Cragsmoor, there was a line of two people. I've never seen a line there, man. Not once.
Right.
We wait to see. I note that there are some candidates in Ulster County that no one wants to run against, i.e. March Gallagher, the county controller. in Turnbull Worthing, the contest really is supervisor job. Terry Houck, who's looking for a third term, has done a great job in terms of keeping taxes down, but has annoyed some of his Republican side with the $10 million new highway garage. You got to get a new highway garage. People don't want it. You know, people don't like it. People don't want to spend that extra money. But, you know, meanwhile, you've got incredibly expensive equipment that's sitting out in the snow. You really want that? So finally, after 20 years, the town, you know, bit the bullet and they went out and they got the highway garage done and they got the old one refurbished. So they did that. But will he pay a political price? Running against him is Joseph Steckler III, younger, raised here, knows everything. But the question is, he has a real estate business. Is that a conflict of interest? Does anybody care? But, you know, what we also know is this election probably, and this is probably region-wide, correct me if I'm wrong, but my sense of it is this is going to be a real tribal election. Ds vote for the D line, Rs for the R line, Cs are for the R line too, working families for the D line. I mean, will people do what I did, which is split the ticket? That's the question, you know? Anyway, but this is local, and local politics is not the same as what goes on at the national level, and we all know that, don't we? Anyway, we have to hope so. Anyway, other issues in Ulster County. I think we're pretty sure that Lindsay Gross will win, the Rosendale side of things. Pretty sure that Craig Lopez will retain District 14 down here, and pretty sure that, well, we don't know. District 15, which includes Ellenville, this is for the county legislature, pits T.J. Briggs, who's done everything. He's been a village person. He's been a town board person. He's been a mayor. He's been, I don't know, 10 years, I think, on the county legislature. And he's running back for that again. But up against him, Cassie Spohr, who put in a really good term as a town council person, stepping in when Stephen Bradley passed away so sadly. And I don't know. There you go. It's a novice at the county legislative level, but somebody who worked very hard when she was a town council person. Up against someone who knows everything, knows all the ropes, and has been there and done it all. So, hey, that's that one. What can we say beyond any?
Well,
of that?
Chris, actually, that's just about all the time that we've got. But I thank you for giving us that really quick and concentrated update on what you're watching in your neck of Ulster County.
All right, well, that's what we're watching. And we're watching. We're a little bit interested in what happens here in World War III. We'll find out.
All right.
Oh, and didn't even mention Ellenville. But anyway, there's interesting things happening there, too. Anyway, you guys have a good night. Take care now.
Thank you so much. And that's Chris Riley from Shongong Journal. And you usually hear him Fridays on the local edition talking to Patricio. I'm Jason Dole, and I'm here and saying goodnight now to Genevieve Hartnett. Thank you for being here. Oh, sorry. Let's try that again.
Thank you so much.
Kimberly.
Thank you.
Izar, and Patricio Rabayo.
Thank you.
All right. And coming up next, we go back to regular programming. We're getting ready for Mr. Kusar Grace. There will be a bit of delay before we're able to start Mr. Kusar Grace's Music Emporium, but we will be starting it. Hey, we'll be back here tomorrow live for election results coverage on Radio Catskill. Remember, all of our election coverage so far is up at WJFFradio.org. That's WJFFradio.org. Look for our election page there. And yeah, Radio Catskill tomorrow morning, 10 a.m. We'll start bringing you the results. This is Radio Catskill, local news, culture, and NPR on election night.